ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, kids of all ages, animals, buttholes, kinds of cake.
What?
Welcome to Magic the Amateuring.
Welcome.
We love you, Sponge listeners.
I don't know. I prefer the Angel's Food Cake listeners.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Regardless of what composes your body. Thank you for listening to Magic the Amateuring. We're a podcast for learners, lovers, laughers.
Listeners?
Listeners.
Leprechauns?
My name is Ben. I'm one of your hosts. I taught Megan and Maria how to play magic over 5,000 years ago because God told me to.
You built an ark of magic? It was a magic bowl.
And I took one of each animal, a Rakdos and a Selesnya.
And it rained card sleeves for 40 days and 40 nights.
Speaking of knights, here's my co-host, Maria.
Hey, thank you. I am a knight. I was knighted by the British throne. Queen Elizabeth put her sword on me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congrats.
So I'm technically a dame.
Wow.
Yes.
Fancy.
And this over here is Megan.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaking of dames, am I right?
I, in fact, am a dame. I perpetually live in a film noir movie.
You should check out her gams.
I go to a detective every day. with a different problem.
Did you always do it though? That's my real question. Is it always you?
It's always me. Okay. I'm always the person who committed the crime.
Hey guys, I'm glad you're with us this week. We have a great show for you. We're going to be talking about PTQ Sealed because we just did one in our hometown of Minneapolis.
And it's etched into our retina brains.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm still seeing those cards out in front of me. It's like one of those when you stare at the sun or a lamp for a long time. Stays in your eye holes.
Yeah. I always stare at lamps.
We're also going to be, talking about clocks in our For the Noobs segment. Mm. And we have a fun new game from Megan, who she wants to call it Playable or Nayable.
There's probably a better name for it, but I mean, why look for it?
At this point, we're just committed.
We're going to call it Playable or Nayable.
And we have a big announcement at the end of the show.
What? Are you getting married?
You gotta wait.
Are you pregnant?
You gotta wait.
Oh, damn it.
Am I getting married to my pregnancy? Gotta wait.
Oh.
What does that mean?
I don't know. You're the one who said it.
For the Noobs, clocks.
Hey guys, I want to talk to you about, this is more of a general strategic concept. It's clocks. What is a clock? Why is a clock?
It keeps time in a house.
It can go on a wall. It's either digital or analog.
And we're going to be talking mostly about limited, although a lot of this will also apply in general to control decks.
Constructed
decks, yes. So when someone talks about clocking an opponent in Magic, what they mean is that's shorthand for putting their opponent on a clock. Do you have a question, Maria?
I just want to say, is it when they punch him real hard in the face?
That's one way to do it.
Okay.
And by putting your opponent on a clock, that means you're presenting a threat on the board that gives your opponent a limited number of turns before they're going to die. So a classic example would be, say you play a Windrake, a 2-2 flyer, and your opponent is at 20 life. Your opponent is now on a 10-turn clock. So they have 10 turns.
To not die.
To play some card that can stop you from dealing 2 damage to them every turn, right?
Or they can put you on a shorter clock.
We'll get to that later.
Okay.
So.
My bad.
So I just want to do a couple examples of clocks. So with Windrake.
Wristwatch.
With the Windrake.
Grandfather.
Depending on the type of.
Cuckoo.
Sundial.
Depending on the type of threat. The type of answer that your opponent needs to change that clock is different. So for a Windrake, for example, they could have a shock or a lightning bolt, something that removes the Windrake. Now your clock is back to infinity. Or they could play a giant spider, something that can block the Windrake. Now they've stopped the clock that you put them on.
Because that Windrake can't attack anymore.
And just to give an example of the threat, if you played a Sarah Angel, and your opponent is at 12 life, well, now they're on a 3-turn clock, and they need a better answer than for the Windrake.
Yeah.
So it's a better clock both in the number of turns, and then also in the number of answers that your opponent can have.
Mm.
And as a counterexample to that, imagine if you just played 1-1, like a Sedge Scorpion or something.
Yeah.
Your opponent is technically on a 20-turn clock.
Right. Wow.
But basically any magic card stops that clock, right? All they have to do is play any creature that can block.
Yeah.
And trade for the Sedge Scorpion or whatever. Okay.
Unless I have infinite coordinated assaults and rise to the challenges.
Well, then that's yeah.
Okay. But that clock still got extended because they're blocked.
You can actually, when you're thinking about your clock, you can add in any combat tricks or burn spells that you have.
I was going to ask about that.
So if your opponent's at 15, you've got a 4-4 flyer, but you also have a lightning strike, you can say they're on a 3-turn clock because on the last turn, you can just lightning strike their face. And the same is true for...
Lifelink?
If you had Titan Strength.
Oh, yeah. Then you're like, oh, they're on if they're at 12 and I have a 3-3, they're on a 4-turn clock, but really they're on a 3-turn clock because I can Titan Strength.
Once. You can surprise that shit.
Oh, snap.
And Lifelink we'll talk about when we talk about racing, which is now.
Oh,
wait, when are we going to talk about racing?
Now.
Good.
If both players have a clock,
yes,
then you have a race on your hands. So say I have say I have a Vaporkin, it's a 2-1 flyer, but it cannot block creatures without flying. And you have a, what's it called? The 3-2 Swordwise Centaur.
Ooh.
So I can't block your thing, and you can't block my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to win, Swordwise?
Probably, assuming we're both at 20 life.
Right.
And nothing else gets
played. Nothing else ever is played.
Swordwise Centaur is a 7-turn clock because, just to run through the math of that, it's 20 divided by 3 is 6 2/3. You have to round up.
I'm going to only round down.
I have you in a 6 2/3 turns clock.
So that means on the 7th turn that you attack with Swordwise Centaur, you should kill your opponent.
Yeah.
And the 2-1 Vaporkin is only a 10-turn clock. So just based on that board state, the Centaur is going to come out ahead. And that's, in general, the best way to say who's winning a Magic game, or one of the easiest ways to say who's winning. Because your life, you can't just look at the life total and say who's at a higher life total, because that doesn't give you the whole story.
Yeah.
But if you can look at the board and say, oh, this person can just attack for more every turn than the other person, or based on the current life totals, this person is going to win first, that gives you a good idea of who's winning. You also do need to take into effect things like cards in the hand.
Yeah.
But the reason you have to take into account how many cards are in the hand is because each one of those cards is potentially affecting one player's clock.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
You talked about racing. Mm. I've heard and said in my own head when I've been playing a match.
When you're having,
Oh, this is a race now.
Ooh.
Spicy.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that, like, not every game is a race.
A really good example is, like, a control deck, for instance, at the beginning of the game, or really never, is never interested in racing. They're just interested in, like, killing your shit, not
stabilizing.
Dying. Exactly, stabilizing. And then, like, then they'll get around to killing you later on.
Creepy.
That is actually what I call the Grandfather Dali principle.
Go on.
What?
Control decks want to slow down or melt their opponent's clocks.
Oh!
Grandfather Dali.
Like a Dali painting or like a shitty grandfather clock.
I like it.
Your bias against grandfather clocks is, I don't understand where it comes from.
I actually love grandfather clocks, but my grandfather has one.
Yeah.
And they don't use it because it's like...
It doesn't work.
You gotta wind
it. Has 40-minute hours or something.
Yeah, it seems problematic.
It's very surreal.
Well, this day is flying by.
So you, as a control deck, you want to play out blockers, which will halt your opponent's clocks. You want to use removal to kill the threats that you can't block.
Yeah.
And so, so the strategy of a control deck is not to present a very fast clock or to race.
Yeah.
It's to just halt your opponent's clock, and then whatever threat you play is going to be better just because your opponent doesn't have any threats.
But sometimes you will find yourself in the situation where every turn you're just attacking each other. Like, seeing yeah. who can get there faster.
Like if you have two aggro decks against each other.
Yeah, but in a control deck, it's like, okay, we're in a foot race. My strategy is to take away your shoes. Legs. I was okay. going to say shoes.
But legs is better.
Legs is definitely more effective.
Depending on, it actually depends on the degree of a control deck that you are. If you're like a super controlling deck, then you just want to stop all damage altogether. If you're maybe just slightly more controlling than your opponent, then okay, you just steal their shoes and you wear your own shoes so yeah. you can just run slightly
faster. You put their shoes on your hands and you get on all fours and get on that race. Right.
So a super control deck is like tying you up. They're tying you up, leaving you there.
Then you're to be killed stuck. By exposure.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. But yes, say that you're not a control deck, but you just think you can do damage faster than your opponent. Yeah. That would be like a classic race, right?
Yeah. And so a classic race situation is there are cards, right? Like obviously Hopeful Eidolon is always a good card. It helps in lots of situations, but that's the kind of card, like if you're an aggro deck that's racing another aggro deck, well, obviously like a lifelinker, a big lifelinker on like a Wingsteed Rider really swings it in your favor.
Right. And I just want to point out that when you're doing the race math,
yeah,
you have to take into account things like lifelink, things like Servant of Timuret, the one life drain off yeah. of that card where your opponent loses one life and you gain one life.
Yeah.
You have to take into account things like Spiteful Return. When it attacks,
yeah.
you just lose two life right away.
No matter what.
You have to take all that stuff into account. And if your opponent is gaining life, you have to subtract that off of the damage you're doing for your clock.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yes.
How, I mean, I can see the benefit of it, but I can also see sometimes it being, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but if you're thinking solely in clock terms, mm-hmm. and then they play something that like completely changes the way you were thinking about it, now yes. are you all messed up in your head because you were too focused on this is my plan and this is what I was going to do and you weren't just being open to what your opponent was going to do?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. It's
like, you definitely need to take into account what cards your opponent could play, what cards your opponent is likely to play. Yeah. And usually when you start thinking about clocks, you only start doing the math when you and your opponent have both played out most of your cards. So once your opponent has, you know, one or okay. two cards in their hand, or they've gone a turn without, you know, they have a bunch of mana open, they haven't played anything, you can probably start thinking, okay, we're in the end game. My opponent is not likely to have many more spells, or, you know, maybe they have all lands in their hand, or maybe they can only have one or two specific spells. That's when yeah. you want to start saying, okay, well, this is, like, if they don't play anything, this is what I'm going to do. And then you can also go one level further and think about, okay, if they play a 3-3 blocker, like, then what does my clock look like? Or if they're able to remove one of my creatures, then what does my clock look like?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why, you know, when you have the example of, okay, I play a 1-1 on turn 1, 20-turn clock, that's why that doesn't make any sense, because you're assuming that your opponent has
absolutely
all lands
nothing.
And is going to draw all lands.
Yeah.
Or maybe all lands and pump spells.
Yeah.
You guys, this is a PTQ story, but yeah. that was me yesterday in mm-hmm. one of my matches. I had
all
nothing.
Lands and pump spells.
It was all lands, not pump spells, but like Sudden Storm. I had two Sudden Storms and various other things like Necrobite or whatever. It was all stuff that could absolutely do nothing to interact with his cards. And it was the entire game that I drew this. And he was just like looking at me like, because all I was doing was playing lands. And he's just like, I had like 8-9 lands out there. And he was so confused. He was so scared. He's like,
what
is
are
she
going
to
do? What are you going to do?
And it was just like, nothing, man.
Oh, nothing, man.
Nice.
I do want to point out, though, that just because you don't, you know, just because you don't know what your opponent could have or what they could be playing that can affect your clock, you still want to, yeah. in general, do as much damage as possible just because you don't know yeah. if the game is going to devolve into a race later. In general, if you have a super controlling deck, then you might be able to be more conservative and just yeah. kind of wait it out and assume that you're going to take control of the game later.
Yeah. In any, just going back to what Maria was talking about with like with those two Sudden Storms and like Necrobite,
yeah.
that's a really good argument. I feel like clocks are like a really good way to also think about needing to develop your board.
Yes.
Which is something that I've only recently started thinking about, like, oh, this is a turn when I could play like this trick, but it's also a turn when I could spend all of my mana and play this creature and develop my board instead. Because if I'm going to present a clock, like a creature on the board is going to more dramatically affect my opponent's clock than me playing a pump spell one turn and then like not developing my board by playing this creature in my hand.
Right, because because your tricks or your tempo cards like Sun Storm are, you know, one-time effects.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Sun Storm, it's kind of like a two-time effect.
Yeah.
But creatures you play are cumulative, meaning that every turn they're going to, you know, you play the first turn you play them, you're investing, but then every subsequent turn they're going to potentially increase your clock. So there's a lot more potential just by having more creatures.
They're like
on
a good stock.
Yeah, good stock option.
And a trick is like a slot like at the casino.
Or a gumball.
A gumball.
It's going to run out of flavor sooner or later. Speaking of which.
Speaking of gumballs.
I have something I call the Flavor Flav principle.
Please tell us about the Flava Flav principle.
The principle is who has the bigger clock? That person is probably the more aggressive deck or the more aggressive player.
What do you
in
mean
matchup.
By bigger?
I mean, who can do, who is doing more damage turn? Who is putting your opponent on a fewer turn clock?
Okay.
So who's going to kill your opponent first? That person is probably kind of calling the shots in the game. Like they're setting the tempo of the game.
As Flavor Flav did.
And they're challenging the opponent to take control of the game back from them.
Yeah.
Much like Flavor Flav
Much
does.
Like Flavor Flav did to all those other rappers, and that's why.
Yeah. Yep.
That's why he's the only remaining rapper.
Correct.
Oh, Flavor Flav. Why'd you have to do that? Why'd you have to clock those other rappers? this time I mean punch.
I also have a rule of thumb. This is something Marie and I were kind of talking about when we were talking about trading damage. So whenever you make an attack, it's always good to think about, okay, if I make this attack, if I attack with this creature, what is my opponent going to be able to attack me back for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for example,
called the crackback.
Mm-hmm. Sure, the crackback. So for example, if you have a 3/3 and they have a 3/3 as well. If you attack, they can either block and trade with your guy or they can potentially attack you back for 3.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have a 2/4, so you have like 3 2/4s and they have 2 3/3s.
Mm-hmm.
You could attack them with all 3 and you'd probably get through for 2.
Yeah.
Or maybe they would double block one and you'd get through for 4.
Mm-hmm.
But if you did that, then they can definitely attack back for 6.
Yeah.
So you have to ask yourself, is it worth me trading that 2 or 4 damage for them to do 6 back to me?
Yeah.
And when would the only time be when that would be worth it? When you think you have them on a faster clock?
Well, I have this kind of ratio rule of thumb, which says, okay, if the only, like, it's probably only worth it for me to do 2 damage for their 6 damage if I have 3 times as much life as them.
Mm.
If the ratio is 3-1, then in general, I want to have a lot more life than they do in order to make that trade worth it.
Yeah.
Because your life points become more and more valuable as you get closer to 0, right?
Yeah.
When you're at 20, 1 life point is worth almost nothing. But when you're at 1, it's worth everything.
That's like days when you get older, you know?
Yeah.
When you're younger, whatever. Who cares? When you're 92, that day is going to be the best day.
That's what I call the cancer principle. How much time do I have left?
No. That's the worst principle of them so far.
You didn't go to high school where I went to high school.
So the three questions that you want to ask yourself are cancer, answer, and dancer. Cancer, how much time do I have left? Answer, what am I likely to draw or what is my opponent likely to draw that will affect the board?
Uh-huh.
And dancer, if I attack my opponent, how much are they attacking back for?
Why is that dancer?
Just like when you're dancing, you know. If I step on my partner's foot, are they going to step on my foot too?
All right. Sure. We'll just say yeah. Yeah, that works.
And lastly, My final principle is the bar time principle. Which
this
just
has been a lot of principles.
Which just,
I hope you guys are writing the shit down.
Which yeah. just says, do I actually have any other options?
I thought it was going to be like how bar time is 15 minutes earlier than actual time.
No, that's a good one too. We should make two. We should have two different bar times.
That's not confusing at all.
My point here is that your opponent might play some cards that you just have no answer to. For example, if they have 4 or 5 hexproof and they make it unblockable with an enchantment,
yeah,
then that's just a clock that you probably can't deal with. There's only
hold
two, two or three or four cards in the game of Magic. Hold at bay. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Not actually an answer. But there's only two or three cards that will actually destroy a creature without targeting it.
Yeah.
So, or affect a creature without targeting it. So, if you are able to race your opponent instead of trying to come up with those answers, then that is an option that will work. Or it is at least possible to work. Whereas coming up, like, you might just know that you don't have any answers. Or you might know that you only have one answer in your deck. In which case, you can say, okay, my game plan is to race them instead of answering that.
Yeah. Especially if answering is not an option.
Right.
Like when I was playing against the Tromocratus.
Yeah, man. Cards the house.
And I also want to point out that just in general, trying to race your opponent early in the game can make a lot of their cards worse if they have aggressive cards. If they have cards like Spiteful Return that are only good when they're attacking, or if they have cards like, Kragma Butcher, which gets +2/+0 when it untaps. That's only good for your opponent if they are able to attack with it. And if you can attack them early, put them on the back foot, and make them question whether or not they should actually be attacking, you can get ahead in the race just because of that. You can turn off cards like there are deals that only give them benefits when they attack, stuff like that.
Nice.
Or cards that, make their shit unblockable. Doesn't matter how unblockable your giant is, you're going to die.
I've been in that situation where someone was being real cute and they put an Aqueous Form on a Flamespeaker Adept.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, but it turns out like that doesn't matter because I was playing like a green big dude's deck.
Yeah.
It's like, sure, starting on turn 4, you can hit me for 4 every turn, but I've been hitting you for like 3 and then 3 and then I'm going to drop an Essien Asp and like hit you for 7 or whatever. And so it's like, oh, that's cute, but like, and you're presenting a pretty small clock, but mine happens to be smaller.
Yeah.
Bigger.
Bigger. My clock.
Faster.
Stronger.
Upgraded.
Harder.
Oh, God. I was just going to say we should all just sing Clocks by Coldplay.
I don't know that one.
Oh, yeah, sure.
How does it go?
Hold on. I can YouTube
it. I'm a clock. You're a clock.
We're all clocks
living in a clock submarine. Okay, so do we want to review? Yeah. Let's just review all those principles.
Wait. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Something that I've learned, speaking of clocks, is like, it can make corn. Maria, God damn it! Please,
I'm tickling Megan's feet with a pen.
I know. Is that racing? Being in a race situation can make like cards that you would usually be like, this card is crap, actually quite good.
Mm.
Like Lost in a Labyrinth. If you're a blue-white aggro deck, Lost in a Labyrinth actually can turn out to be pretty good if your opponent is also racing, and then one turn you can just be, well, this turn you're doing me 3 less damage.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden,
hold it base.
Yeah. Another one, that I used yesterday was like Mortal's Ardor, which gives a guy, like, if you don't have a Hopeful Eidolon, give one guy lifelink for a turn, and if your opponent's racing you, all of a sudden you've thrown that clock completely off.
Yeah, that's very true. You just have to keep in mind, you don't always know when you're going to be in a racing situation.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about like post-board situations.
Sure. Yeah. If you think the game is going to devolve into a race, or for example, if you think that they have a card that you just can't deal with, like maybe they have, it seems like their plan is to make their cards unblockable, or they have a Prognostic Sphinx or something, you might just say, okay, I'm going to devote my strategy towards racing them because that's my only shot of winning. In general, cards like that help you race aren't always good because sometimes, you're just like either they're way ahead and your race card is just no good,
yeah,
or you're way ahead and then your race card doesn't really help you close out the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's yeah.
For sure.
Are we going to review?
Okay.
Everyone take out your pants. Oh God. We don't have the rights to this shit. All right, Ben, review to the music.
Ben, let's
I play out Seder Fire Dancer. I burn you, and that's an answer, yeah.
All right, are we
so we have the three questions: cancer, answer, and dancer. We have the bar time principle, the ratio rule of thumb, or as I like to call it, the tortoise and the faster tortoise.
All these names.
And we have, of course, the Flavor Flav principle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And wait, you forgot grandfather Dali clock.
Oh my God!
Write that down. Put it on your inner thigh so you can peek at it.
Yep.
Knuckle tap party.
Knuckle tap party.
So this week on Twitter, Megan decided to ask a very important question.
Yes, this is because she is definitely getting knuckle taps.
Oh, yeah.
And our listeners and our Twitter followers.
It's a verbal contract.
Yeah, you have to do it.
And it's about to be a digital contract. Digital as in fingers.
God. We got some good responses from our followers. You can become one of these cool people if you just follow MTAcast on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's a great magic community on Twitter. Yeah. Is alive and thriving. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
What?
Listeners, come to GP Minneapolis and we'll all get knuckle tattoos together.
To remember it.
Yes, but we'll chicken out at the last minute. But you guys.
So if you've been thinking about getting knuckle tats that are magic related, here are some possibilities for you to consider.
Okay, so.
So you need to have, it's got to be 8 letters or 4 letters.
So the idea behind the knuckle tag is I'm getting a letter on each knuckle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I can show them to my opponent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yes.
They spell it a word.
Yeah.
Or have some kind of meaning.
Correct.
All right, I'm on board with the joke.
Okay, tell me what you think of these. Good game.
Oh,
that's pretty basic.
That's presumptive.
Pretty.
Jace wins was one we had.
Okay.
And also fuck Jace. So yes. I guess it's however you feel about it, yeah. Personally. Mana burn, which is not relevant anymore, but a card draw. Mm. Maybe the guy who's thinking about Jace will also think about that one.
Mm-hmm.
Lava axe, lifelink. Pass turn. I like pass turn. You're just like, you don't have to say anything.
You don't have to say anything.
Pass turn. This one requires 2 layers, so it'd have to go across your knuckles twice. Windmill slam, y'all.
I like that one.
Just so stupid.
I liked the one that was GLHF, good luck, high five.
Yeah.
And then you put your hand up.
Yeah.
So that's just across one knuckles. It's GLHF.
And then put a hand up for a high five.
I
love that so much.
That was a pretty great one. That was my favorite.
Another of my favorites was Hover Tube, which is just H-O-V-R. Hover Tube.
A great callback.
Callback.
Great callback.
One of our earlier episodes. Another fantastic one is 20 damage.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Which also, on one hand, just spells mage. So, you know, you're getting
2 for 1.
2 for 1 there.
That would be a good knuckle tag.
2 for 1.
One of those would have to be a number, but
only one of them. Oh,
I think you get 2. You spell out the number 4 and then 1.
Ah! That makes no sense.
That's the stupidest thing ever. Someone also suggested Lanowar,
yeah.
Voldaren.
Yeah, for Olivia
Voldaren.
Sure.
Nope. Just on one hand. That's if you play a lot of counter magic.
I like that one. Just being like, nope.
Yep.
Slamming a counter spell.
And then you, and then a 0 with a line through it. Game. You don't got game.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah.
Harsh.
Here's what I'm going to get.
What are you going to get, Ben?
One of my favorite things in magic is to use a Planeswalker's ultimate ability. So I'm just going to get one that says ultimate.
Oh, nice.
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 sweet, guys.
So if you want to get in on the fun, follow us at MTAcast.
On Twitter.
It's a party every day and it really every night.
So you guys, yesterday we were at a PTQ all day.
All day.
All day, man.
All day, all night.
When did you leave, Megan?
I left the building at 11:30 p.m.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I was there at 8:45 in the morning.
Okay. You were. We got there at like 9:15, 9:20.
Yeah. Oh, Ben was sleeping in a sunbeam in a corner.
He really was. He was taking a little cat nap like a cat in sunbeam cat. Mm-hmm.
They had one of those like cat posts for humans things.
Were you?
I curled up in it.
Scratching?
Oh my God, I want them to make cat posts for people.
That I bet those exist.
I think that's just a bunk bed.
A papasan chair.
Is that a bunk bed?
What the fuck is a papasan chair?
You're looking
chair
at
over
one.
There.
Is the listener looking?
Oh, it's like one of those bowl chairs. It's a bowl chair.
Oh, it's one of those chairs when you sit in it, you hurt yourself.
You can't get up.
And you damage the chair.
It's like.
Do you just not know how to sit?
What? I think they're comfortable.
They're comfortable, but getting in them is like...
You're going to do some damage.
It's true. It's a little bit.
Something's going to tear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this was Megan and my second PTQ.
Congratulations, guys.
Wait, it was my third.
Oh, okay. You played construction.
It was my third as well.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are tight
Wait,
now.
No, it was my fourth. My fifth. Ben, God damn, lose. It was my fifth.
Okay.
It's my second. So.
But it was only my third. It was my third sealed.
Second okay. sealed. You're thinking no, of GP.
I went to Ames, and then I went to the one in Coon Rapids when you were interviewing Al Franken.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You guys, I interviewed Al Franken, NBD.
Yeah, you did.
Nice.
So this was sealed PTQ. There are 166 players. Mm. Let's just quickly tell for the listeners so they can follow our personal journey, how we just did, what were our records and places.
Nice. I went 5-3. And ended up 41st.
Brilliant. I went 4-4 and ended up 47th.
Oh, I went 6-2 and I ended up either 16th, if you trust the list that was posted at the tournament, or 14th, if you look on the Planeswalker Points website. So
nice.
Who knows?
Can I just take a moment to say, those are all really impressive numbers.
You guys, we were all in the top third.
That's insane.
That was pretty sweet.
Personal best for me. Was it a personal best for all of us?
It was a personal best for me by a long shot.
Yeah. Wow. For sure. The only other sealed PTQ I've done, like, mm-hmm. I lost, 0-2'd and dropped to play Modern Masters. So it was like...
Nice. I really appreciated playing it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I should have stopped. I mean, I was on a winning streak. I was like 4-1 and then just...
Oh, I did the opposite. I was on a losing streak, and then I won 4 matches in a row.
I thought your deck was so good.
Boom!
Well, Maria, actually, I just want to point out that you were in contention longer than any of us, because I ended up going 2-2 to be basically out of contention at a PTQ. So you, in a sense, did better than we did.
You, in a sense, did better than all of us.
And it was really painful, actually, my second loss, or whatever, because I was sitting at 4-1, and I could have been 5-1.
Can you describe the feeling as like a flavor of ice cream?
Okay, like if ice cream tasted like a hot dog butt.
Wait. Like the end of a hot dog? That would be a pretty painful flavor of ice cream.
That is what I mean.
Yeah.
That is what I mean. It is none of the good parts of a hot dog and only the disturbing parts.
It's like that little part where they wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it tasted like.
Let's wrap up this hot dog, guys. Put it in that ice cream.
Because it was so painful because almost won.
Does this ice cream, is it flavored like hot dog butts or are there little like hot dog butts in it? Like chocolate chip cookie dough?
Both. Oh, gross.
Sick.
That is so
sick.
Gross.
So it tastes like hot dog butt and then every once in a while you get an actual chunk of hot dog butt.
That is the worst thing I can possibly imagine.
What is the Ben and Jerry's name of this flavor of ice cream?
I think just hot dog butt.
I'm going to name it Canine Calamity.
That's a good one.
Sure, I'm going to name it Canis Lupus Uguna Pucus. But that's wolf, not dog. So, never mind. I killed Ben. What I'm trying to say is...
I'm gonna name it The End Is Nigh.
You're probably going to choke on one of those hot dog ends.
Yeah, I've told this story to you guys both times now, but we were going into game three, and I'd so had him. But he played a Tromocratus, and I couldn't deal with it. He was at one life, and I was just hoping to top deck my sip of hemlock or
like
some
shit. Or like a Blood Toll Harpy or something.
I had several Blood Toll Harpies. I mean, not Blood Toll Harpies, yeah. But I had life linkers and like I had so many answers and I just didn't do it. So it was very painful because I was at like 36 life or something.
Oh,
and he was at one.
Ouch.
And he just hit you with Tromocratus?
That many times.
Wow, five times.
And I couldn't, I mean, the fucker is hexproof, so I couldn't sudden storm him.
Yeah. Wait, sudden storm is instant.
I did sudden storm it when it attacked me, but that wasn't even good enough.
Right, because you have to wait for it to attack.
Yeah.
So you only get it for one turn with the sudden storm.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's like unlocking 1/4 of the potential.
Yeah.
It's like you won the lottery and you just forgot to get 1/4 of the money.
Oh, shit.
Or you had a winning lottery ticket, but you only looked at 1/4 of the numbers.
But like my question is, because I played this deck, it was blue-black control deck, which mm-hmm. is, you know, not my strong suit. Mm. But my first half of the day, like I felt very confident in my matchups and like playing them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I got this or whatever. And mm-hmm. then my second half, when everything went downhill after that Tromocratus defeat,
yeah.
like I just felt in some of those games I had no chance. And I'm like, what happened?
Well, first of all, later in the day, you're playing decks with better records.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because as you win more, you play decks that also have one more. And then also, as a control deck, as you play better decks that have better threats, your answers are going to get a little bit worse if you can't answer mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
So, for example, Tromocratus, you couldn't answer it.
Yeah.
So this gets back to our discussion on control versus racing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you're able to race, sometimes that is a better plan than control. So if you did feel like in some of those decks, like you could not win the long game, then it might be right for you to switch to more of a racing strategy. And maybe you had an alternate build in your pool that would have done
I had
more
a red green.
Faster.
I had a red green build.
Did you ever switch mm-hmm. into it?
No, I didn't. But, you know, God, there's some of those matches where I played against red, white, extremely aggro, mm-hmm. very good mm-hmm. deck. And I was like, I don't think there's any hope for me to beat this unless you don't draw well.
Yeah.
Like in that situation, maybe I could have been like, oh, now you have a red green deck.
In a sealed deck, it's very viable to switch into a completely different archetype based mm-hmm. on what you see from your opponent.
Okay.
So
maybe nice. I just should have sleeved that up.
Good advice.
But you also, I think, have to have a lot of experience with the format to know when to do that. Because
yeah.
if you just switch into a deck that you decided was not as good in general, you know, it might still
be
not as good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though you lost the first game, like your other deck might just give you an even worse chance of winning. So it's hard to say.
But overall, like I was really proud of how I did compared to my first sealed.
Yeah.
Like that was a disaster. And this, I felt like I did a lot better. And there are some games that were very tight and really hard. And I was like, I could have lost this easily myself if I didn't think some of these things through more than I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I was proud of my play in some of the games too.
Nice.
But yeah,
nice.
My biggest takeaway from the PTQ was that when I initially looked at my pool, I just thought it was garbage. I did not have very many.
You came over and said I have a shit deck to me.
Yeah, I did not. I didn't think I had very many good rares. I had like Paxis of Pandemonium.
Ugh.
I had like three rares that were just unplayable. And I ended up playing Nylea, Goddess of the Hunt, which is, you know, can be good, can be not. In my pool, it was decent, but not amazing.
Yeah.
I also had Courser of Crucifix, which is a very good card.
Oh, that card is very good.
But, you know, it's only one card.
Yeah.
And, you know, most sealed pools have at least one bomby card.
Yeah.
And those were basically my only good cards.
Yeah.
But as I was playing out the day, I kind of realized, like, you know, your sealed pool doesn't have to be amazing if you're able to build a proactive deck that can do well and, you know, punish your opponents. You might have to get a little lucky, you know, and I certainly did get somewhat lucky because I had a lot of opponents that were, you know, mulliganing and giving me an opportunity to punish them, do a lot of damage before they could stabilize and close out games that way. So I mean, my biggest takeaway was that, like, even if you open a pool that's not the best,
you can make it work.
It is still possible to make it work, and like you shouldn't just
and
assume
I think
that it won't.
That's been proven over and over again when we see pro players and sealed tournaments getting to the top eight consecutively.
Yeah.
If you make the correct decisions, in general, you will be rewarded. Not always, but more than other people.
Yeah. The statistic I've heard is that about 1 in 10 sealed pools you get, like, doesn't have a chance. Okay. But I feel like there are a lot more that feel like you look at them and you're like, uh-oh, this is crap.
Yeah.
But the truth is that, like, 9 out of 10 of those, there's something to be done in there.
Yeah.
I was in a situation similar to yours where I played one rare, which was a really good one. It was a fleece mane lion. That guy, that's a dude.
Rawr.
Yeah. And I just went with, it was like a very synergistic, like white green aggro. It had like two Acron sky guards and a wingsteed rider, like elite skirmisher and just like tricks and tricks and tricks and tricks and tricks.
Yeah.
Tricks and tricks.
And there were times when, like, my opponents just, like, if they didn't put anything down before turn 3, it's like they were super fucked. Because it's like, oh, I'll, like, play this policeman line, hit you, play this skirmisher, target it, hit you again.
Yeah.
I definitely underestimated the efficacy of just playing, like, some 2/1s.
Yeah.
And then putting Feral Invocation on it.
Yeah.
Or, like, playing this Ghostblade Eidolon, putting, like, as a 1/1, then putting something on it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, there was a game pretty late, or there was a match pretty late where I felt like, okay, I can't stop my opponent, like, what he's trying to do, because he's, like, red-green aggro, and I just am not going to be able to beat his tricks.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to switch into the most aggressive build that I can think of, and
it worked.
I basically won by doing just that. Like, I played a 2/1 and I put Feral Invocation on it, and then I just kept playing things that I could attack with, and you know, by the time he just had a slow start and I was able to take advantage of it.
I found red green was definitely the 3 matches that I lost were all 2 red green, which I think is a very strong build in Born of the Gods right now. Because it has a lot of, it's like a lot of big guys for a, like, and very reasonably, follow the hammer and, like, really reasonably costed big fat guys. Which when you're playing, like, a little, like, white aggro deck, it's like, well, I'll play, like, this 1/1 flyer for 2, and for 2 you're going to play this Swordwise Centaur, which is a 3/2.
So,
and it's like, oh, that's rough.
Do you think that, my question to the takeaway is, like, a lot of people say aggressive builds are not super ideal in sealed. But I'm wondering if, like, I would think I kind of want to have a super aggressive build in Theros.
I think
Born of the Gods.
There's a spectrum between aggro and control. I think in general in sealed you want to be more aggressive than your opponent.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you want to be as aggressive as possible, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
You want, like, I feel like the ideal is to be aggressive, but have a good top end to support it. Like, you don't want to get to 6 mana and be like, well, there's nothing in my deck that I'm going to draw that's, like, a good sink for this 6 mana. You don't want to have a leftover deck that's all 2/1s for 2, because that's not going to be particularly great.
But in this format, because there are so many bestow creatures and really good combat tricks, there's just going to be a lot of turns where you just can't block. So, for example, if, you know, it's turn 5 or something and your opponent bestows Nimbus Naiad and attacks you, then it's like, oh, well, if I was holding my creatures back to block, then I basically just wasted those creatures, because not only did my opponent attack past them, he attacked for 2 more. Which is why having a plan where you play a creature almost every turn you're able to attack with them is good.
Yeah.
So if you are able to go 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop, or even 2-drop, 3-drop, 2-drop, and keep attacking your opponent, you're probably going to be in good shape.
Yeah.
Where you get into trouble is if you build a deck that goes, you know, shitty 1-drop, shitty 2-drop, 3-drop, shitty 1-drop.
Okay. Yeah.
Your opponent's probably going to be able to beat that, especially, you know, even if they just go 2-drop, 3-drop, well, now they're probably outclassing most of your guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you want to play aggressive cards, but you want to make sure that they're not going to get outclassed. And one of the ways to do that is with bestow creatures. Another way is to have really good combat tricks that can attack even when your creatures are outclassed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where you can get into trouble is if you're too extreme. You're either, you know, way too slow, or you try to be way too fast and you just run out of steam if your opponent is able to interact with you at all.
Yeah. Good. Do you guys have anybody have a favorite card from yesterday?
Good question.
Yeah.
Artisan Sorrow.
Oh God, that card is real good.
Yeah.
It was really good. It got me out of some jams and some binds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick Spiteful Return was my superstar, as was my Insatiable good. Harpies.
Yeah.
Too.
Real good.
Ever put it on the Harpies?
Yes, I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mortals Resolve. One in a green, +1/+1 and indestructible.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that card.
It's the trick that, I think right now it's one of the best tricks.
What does it cost?
One in a green.
Okay.
Just because it beats all other tricks.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Well, it's just like it's going to save your creature no matter what.
It beats everything other than like bounce.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and bounce just sucks.
Although I have to say I beat one.
What did you do?
Without bouncing.
Oh.
My opponent made a mistake. I actually knew that he had Mortals Resolve. And I kind of didn't think about it, but he blocked my creature and then cast Mortal's Resolve. And I Divine Verdicted in response.
Yep. Solid. Solid.
Just to point that out, that is something that you can easily play around. If you cast Mortal's Resolve before blocking.
Pre-combat. Yeah.
Before
blocking.
Right. Before blocking with your creature, then your creature is not attacking or blocking, and it can't be targeted by Divine Verdict.
Yeah. Nice. But
that's not to say you should always cast Mortal's Resolve before blocking. If your opponent does have a bounce spell,
then it's going
to
be real bad.
Then it can be better for you to block first and then cast Mortal's Resolve. Then that way, if you get bounced, you at least blocked for the turn, even if you're getting blown out a little bit. So when you are casting that Mortal's Resolve, in general, you can just look, okay, do they have
Voyage's End or do they have Divine Verdict?
And if they have mana for both, then
That's the other thing that I like about it is that, like, against another aggro deck, it's just a really solid trick that's going to, again, like, beat their tricks. It's like, I can block with this guy I just played, Mortals Resolve him, sucks to be you. But if you're playing against a control deck, like something that tries to, like, asphyxiate your creature or something like that, or Divine Verdict it, it's like, oh, well, too bad.
Yeah, that's one of the sweetest things about the card is that it works against a lot of removal. It can just blank a lot of removal spells.
So I would say like a part of my decision in deciding, like white was my strongest color by far yesterday. Part of my decision to pair green was one, obviously Fleece Mainline, because that dude's sweet. But having double Mortals Resolve as just being like some really solid tricks in my deck.
Can I tell you something I learned yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay. Only if you say it in a poem.
I played Wave Crash Triton, yes. Then I Retraction Helix. Too many syllables. Fuck. I was trying to do haiku.
Yeah, it's okay. You got this. Yeah. You're doing great.
I like
great.
How it's sing song. It's a good sing song.
I feel weird.
And I wanted to. I wanted to play my Retraction Helix on my Wave Crash Triton the same term that I played it.
You can't do
I
that.
I can't do that.
You can.
You can. You targeted your Wave Crash Triton, so you're going to get to lock something down, but you will sure not get to bounce something.
Two judges did not know the answer to that question, by the way.
What?
Wait, what?
Because I was not
what
sure.
What was the question?
I said, I played it, he has Summoning Sickness. Yeah. I don't believe I can tap, but this says it gains the tap ability, so I wasn't sure. On Retraction Helix?
So something like Springleaf Drum that on the artifact says tap a creature. That you can do with a Summoning Sick creature because it is not the creature's tap ability which you are using. You are using like an outside ability.
Yeah, but Retraction Helix, I'm not using the creature's tap ability.
No, Retraction Helix is giving that creature a tap ability until the end of turn. It says until end of turn, this creature gains tap. Springleaf Drum just says tap that creature. So Springleaf Drum is what is tapping that creature. Wave Crash Triton is gaining this ability for a turn.
Okay. So it's like, even though it's like if it said I had a tap ability on the card, you would not be able to do it.
It's as if Wave Crash Triton for that turn had that text on
it. Okay, that makes sense then.
If Retraction Helix said as an additional cost to cast Retraction Helix, tap an untapped creature you control. Then you could tap a Summoning Sick creature, because that yes. would be the same as on Springleaf Drum. Okay.
But then it wouldn't be targeting the creature.
Yeah. But oh. yeah, with Retraction Helix, it's exactly like that ability was printed on the card for the duration of the turn.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And nice. And just in turn, just I just want to say something about asking questions to judges, especially in a tournament. You need to be very careful about how you ask a question, because judges are not allowed to suggest plays. So yeah. if you did say something like, "Can I cast Retraction Helix on my Wavecrash Titan?"
Yeah.
They would have to say yes.
Interesting.
Yes, because but that does not mean that you can tap that Wavecrash right. Titan.
So the way you have to phrase it is, if I cast this, yeah. Retraction Helix on my Wavecrash Titan that has Summoning Sickness, will I be able to tap it?
And I was playing a judge. That was the worst part.
Oh,
good time. You can just ask me.
That's time. What he said. I was like, nope.
No.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No. Oh, one last note. I was just thinking about that dude that you played, Maria, that I came over and watched. And there was a guy who was like, it was game three. You had chosen to be on the play and you took a mulligan to 5.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, if you want, I'll just go first.
Yeah.
So you can have extra draw. And you correctly were like, no.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah,
your opponent offered to...
Yeah.
Yeah. One, I mean, like, first of all, can he even offer that?
No, you have already said, like, no, that's not a legal thing to do, one. Two, don't do that to your opponent, because that's a dick move, because you're suggesting something illegal.
Another one of...
And also, if your opponent off, like...
That's also suspicious as
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, like, why does your opponent...
Why does your opponent like, want to go... I'll just go first.
As a favor to you, because it'll be better for you.
Shut up, you red aggro.
That's what he was. He's like, no, you can take it. No, I think he was just honestly trying to be a nice guy.
I don't know. I feel like any time that you suggest something that's not legal in like a PTQ.
Yeah, here's the thing about that is, I mean, you almost have an obligation to call a judge if something like that happens, because it's possible that he's done that multiple times in the tournament.
Mm.
Yeah. And... You know, yeah. a lot of his opponents might not have realized that that's illegal. And if you do complain and the judge says, oh, you did this again, then...
Yeah. Then they'll get in trouble.
Then they can punish him, or they can enforce the rules of the tournament, which is always good.
So,
but if you don't report stuff like that, then, you know, your opponent doesn't learn that that's illegal or that that can have repercussions. And then also, like, you know, someone might be getting away with something.
Yeah, I just wanted to point it out as like a like don't just like make sure if someone one don't be the person that does stuff like that and two if someone does do that, like, stick by your guns, do what you know is the right thing to do.
I got a little good karma though, because I stopped my opponent who mulliganed from drawing an extra card when he mulliganed. I was like, no, what are you doing? And he was like, thanks for not being a dick.
Yeah,
because I mean. There's no rule that says you have to do that.
No, I could have just been like, opponent, oh, whoops.
If your opponent does judge. Accidentally draw an extra card, then they will be forced to mulligan again.
Yeah.
One thing that happened to me, one of my opponents, I Artisan Sorrowed his Emissary Purphoros, his enchantment creature.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to attack and win the game.
What?
And he stopped me and was like, That's a creature, because he was thinking, you know, it said non-creature permanent or something like that, and I just said, oh well, it's still an enchantment, right? So I can still target it, and I just offered to call a judge, and he like realized it was pretty late in the day, so I think he was just kind of like
tired.
Yeah, but one thing that I totally appreciated is that if you're playing an opponent, like, you don't have to just let them do whatever they want, you know, and you don't want to just assume that
they're doing
that they know what they're doing. Like, if you have questions or if you have any doubt, like, feel free to ask.
Yeah.
Feel free to clarify what's going on. You know, make sure you pay attention to how many cards your opponent's drawing, stuff like that. Just like make your opponent do the right stuff. Like, they're your opponent. You are playing against them. That's fine for you to do.
I think Spike Jonze said it best.
Yeah.
Do the right thing.
Did he, was that attributed to him?
It's a movie.
Or was that, was he the first person to say that?
Yeah. I have, not me, actually, a friend of the show, Matthias Hunt, sent me a list of cards. And these cards are either so good that they are banned in Legacy, or they are only like fringe playable, like barely any decks play these cards.
So in Legacy, so in either Legacy. They're banned either in Legacy because they're so good,
or they're just unplayable. Like, or they're like unplayable in Legacy, or they're just so bad.
Okay.
I got many of these wrong my first time around. So all right, the first one is Acid Rain. It costs 3 and a blue. It is a sorcery, and it says destroy all forests. 3 and a blue, sorcery, destroy all forests.
Okay.
Wow, what do you think, Maria?
I think that is unplayable.
Really? That seems super powerful.
Well, yeah, but you have to be playing against a forest.
Well, right. But if you are playing against a forest.
Okay, banned.
What do you, so as.
Go with your gut, Maria. Go with your gut.
No, No, you convinced me now.
Okay.
Wait, Ben, do you know the answer?
I don't know the answer.
All right, let's hear an answer from each of you. Final answers.
Banned.
Unplayable.
God damn it!
The answer is this card is unplayable.
Why would you do that?
Ben totally just mind tricked you. All right.
Here's there's not. I mean, in Legacy, you're not playing that many basic lands anyway.
Okay. Here's the next one. This one's way more entertaining.
Go.
1 and a white. This is called Balance. Mm. 1 and a white. It is
banned.
A sorcery. Do you know the card?
Yeah, it's in Cube, right?
Yeah. So each player chooses a number of lands he or she controls equal to the number of lands controlled by the player who controls the fewest. Then sacrifices the rest. Players discard cards and sacrifice creatures the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's banned.
That's fair, right? I mean, how do you get card advantage from that? Because you have to discard and lands and creatures. It all has to become
equal.
You're
not going to convince me this time, Ben. This is a sub game you two are playing on me.
No, that's not true. Maria, your gut instinct was correct. That card is in fact banned. All right. The next card is called Eureka. Hold on. Okay, there we go.
This is
Eureka. It is 2 green-green, a sorcery. Starting with you, each player may put a permanent from his or her hand onto the battlefield. Repeat this process until no one puts a card onto the battlefield.
Can I please hear the flavor text?
This doesn't have flavor text.
Country of origin.
What do you think, Maria?
I want Megan to use it in a sentence.
So the sets it's in are Legends and Masters Edition.
I don't know. It seems very good. I'll say that it's banned.
I don't know because it seems very bad.
Really? You get to put them out for free.
Yeah, but what does your opponent have?
All lands.
Think it's all lands.
Maria, final answer.
Banned.
Unplayable.
Unplayable.
Why?
This card is unplayable.
Why? Look, I'm always going to have better creatures.
Because this is a format where people are playing decks where they could have like...
They have like 12, an Emrakul.
12 indestructible.
Have a fucking Emrakul in their hand.
Oh, okay.
There's a whole deck called Sneak and Show, which is about tricking an Emrakul onto the battlefield.
I think I'm thinking too small of potatoes still.
Yeah. So, like, even though your deck can do something really broken, there are just, like, way better ways to get that out where you don't have to also give your opponent a benefit.
Okay, okay. Yeah. That makes
sense. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, yes. Sure.
Exactly. Frantic Search. This is 2 and a blue, an instant. Draw 2 cards, then discard 2 cards. Untap up to 3 lands. Hmm. Frantic Search.
Why would that be unplayable?
2 and a blue, instant. I'll just repeat it. Draw 2 cards, then discard 2 cards. Untap up to 3 lands. This is a common from Urza's Legacy.
Common.
Would you like to hear the flavor text?
Yes.
Motivation was high in the academy once students realized flunking their exams could kill them.
Oh my god. Dark. Dark. I'm going to go with, banned.
Ben?
I don't know, Maria. I mean...
Don't you try and Scheherazade me.
Discarding cards is, like, pretty bad.
You guys are Scheherazading me. This is a sub game. You're playing with my mind.
I'm gonna say banned, because basically all these cards that untap cards. Well, hold on.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't know.
Isn't this a format where you can like brainstorm and ponder and shit like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this card really better than those cards, Maria?
No.
I'm going to say banned.
It's banned.
Oh, good. Thank God.
All those cards where you untap lands and like you just get to cast
basically,
it for free.
Basically, you just cast it for free.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Jesus.
It basically costs zero mana and like half a card.
Okay. Last one.
Okay.
Last one is called Hermit Druid. It is one and a green creature, human druid. It has green tap. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a basic land card. Put that card into your hand and all other cards revealed this way into your graveyard.
Unplayable.
It is a 1/1. It is a rare from Stronghold.
I'm going to say banned.
It is banned.
Why? You just told me nobody plays basic lands.
You can... What? Yeah. That's why it's broken, because you can put your whole graveyard, whole deck into the graveyard.
And why do you want to do that?
There's a thousand reasons.
There's some really fucked up shit you can do in Legacy. There are reasons why you want your whole grave.
Okay.
Your whole
Laboratory grave Maniac. Graveyard. Laboratory Maniac. You know that card?
Mm-mm.
I'll read it for you.
Okay.
Oh, man. You guys really missed the boat on Laboratory Maniac.
Let's see. Okay, sure. If you would draw a card while your library has no cards in it, you win the game instead.
What?
There you go. There you go.
That card is dum-dums.
It was a card in Innistrad. It was a rare. But if you got it, you could. It was very feasible
to build a
deck.
That's awesome.
There was a deck. There was an archetype, a blue-green archetype, where your whole plan was just to mill yourself,
and then play that.
There was a card that would like put cards back onto your library, so you could like shuffle cards back and draw only the cards you wanted. And there's also a card called Spider Spawning.
Is this a different deck? Yeah, spider spawning.
No, spider spawning was in this deck.
Oh, okay.
You would mill all of your cards, and then spider spawning put a 1/2 green spider creature token with reach onto the battlefield for each creature card in your graveyard.
Oh my god! And it had flashback.
And it has flashback, so you could like mill everything in your deck. You have like one black source that you get, and then you can either flash this back, or you just put it back into your library with Dream Twist, which says. Dream Twist. Target player puts the top 3 cards of his or her library into his graveyard. And it has flashback!
Oh my god.
It has flashback. So you can just
oh my god.
Flash it back to put other cards. And then there was a card that would...
Man, this is why everybody loves Innistrad. Like, there's all this shit you can do.
There was a card... Yeah, actually that is. There's a card called Runic Repetition that says target... It says, return target exiled card with flashback you own to your hand. So you can Dream Twist this into your deck, cast it, get back your exiled Dream Twist card, and just keep looping it.
God.
It was.
Did you ever draft this deck?
Oh, yeah. I don't think I ever got a Laboratory Maniac win. But I definitely got some sweet spider spawning. Those spider spawning tokens are so good. They were all 1/2s at the reach, so your opponent would tag with anything, and you just gang block him, and he's like, maybe he gets to kill 2 of them.
Ugh. Holy and it's just, crap. Like, very flavorful, too, like, all these creepy fucking little spiders.
Yeah, bro.
Oh, God.
You were,
from the graveyard? Graveyard
spiders?
You were flavorfully
obligated to, like, make little ghost spiders on your opponent. Like if they reached over to read the card,
you're supposed to
crawl up their arms.
Like when you play Nicol Bolas, you're supposed to crack an egg on somebody's head.
Yep,
you know that old thing.
Yeah, yeah, the crack an egg on your head. I play Nicol Bolas.
Not familiar with that flavor rule.
You guys, that's our show for this week. Before we go, though, I wanted to say thank you to some more people who have donated to our microphone cause here on the show. Hopefully next week we'll have 2 awesome microphones.
Woo!
Really excited.
And
so
1 shitty microphone.
We're not going to use that one anymore.
What? I'm going to.
Okay. I only have 2
Ben's
inputs
gonna,
on
Ben's
this.
I'm going to talk into an unconnected microphone.
So Thank you to everybody we mentioned last week again. And also thank you to Kyle. Thank you to Richard, Charles, and our friends Alaska Clark and his girlfriend who doesn't even play Magic but listens. Hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
Super generous donation from them. So thank you so much, everybody. I'm not going to close the donation page on our website just because ever since I started getting donations, I'm like, oh, my God, we could get a new mixer. Oh, we could have a microphone for everybody.
Maria's so, dreaming big, you guys.
Dreaming big. So it's still going to be open there if you want to, you know, ever throw a little cash our way. It's just magicthamateuring.com. The donation button is right there on the front page.
Remember, it'll make the show sound better in your head holes.
That's right. That's right. And our big announcement is that you may have heard, if you follow us on Twitter at MTAcast, that the crew is getting together, putting together a web series.
Yeah.
It's called My Roommate is a Planeswalker, and we're going to release some short episodes coming up very soon. We did a shoot, and it shot all day, and it was horribly tiring.
It was really exhausting, but we got a lot of material.
Yeah, we did. So we have a teaser picture up on our Twitter account. Yeah, you can go and find it. But look for that in the coming weeks.
This is going to be like a dramatic web series.
It's going to be a drama. It's a drama.
It's for sure a drama. It's like Downton Abbey of magic.
Yes. We all have British accents.
So that's our big announcement. And if you guys are coming to GP Minneapolis
in a couple weeks,
format is modern, we'll be there. So look for us and say hi. I'll probably just be playing side events, but we'll be there and like willing to hang out and shake your hands.
Yeah, man. I like shaking hands.
I'll touch the side of your head. I'll do you one better.
Nice. Weird.
I'll do those little ghost spiders on your arms.
Remember, you can find the show on iTunes, mtgcast.com, Stitcher, magicthamateuring.com, magicthamateuring@gmail.com is our email address. Follow us on Twitter at MTAcast.
Yes, if you're looking at us on Moto, I am Ice Cream Socialist.
I'm Horny _ Unicorny.
And I am Middle Schooler.
Woo!
You can also review us. Did we say that already?
Yeah.
You can review us
on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you do, we will make a crazy funny pun. It'll be crazy.
It'll be crazy.
Out of your username.
We can't guarantee funny.
Yeah.
No, we really
can't.
But
we can guarantee that we'll give it our all.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to text me, my phone number has no 7 or 6 in it. There's no 7 or 6 digits in my phone number. Join us all again next week on Magic the Amateur.